Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will sit down with Mr. Matt Dixon, Senior Meteorologist for the University of Kentucky. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Y'all not laughing, so I don't know whether I didn't do something right or usually they're laughing at me, Matt, whenever I...
Well, it's all in good, you know, we're laughing with you, not at you.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot in my life.
Well, y'all laugh at me too all the time, so.
Yeah.
No, we laugh with you.
That's with me. That's right. You're right. I stand corrected.
I've actually got Vicki's favorite person on the show today because, you know, Matt was taking care of Vicki back last summer, sending her all the rain and leaving me and Jay out high and dry.
Yep, you know? That's right.
So
I hate that for y'all.
We need different shoes or to wear different makeup or something, I guess.
Yeah, something.
I'm not going to tell you the secret. I'm keeping it to myself.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Matt, welcome. Glad to be here up in the I don't know if this is Mecca or Medina or which one it is, but in Lexington, we're in the, I guess, lower right-hand corner of the Golden Triangle.
We are that. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
Glad to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always a good time with you all. I'll tell you what, we're meeting in much better circumstances than where we were back at the end of October last year, so that's for sure. So
That is true.
We have gone from one extreme condition to the next, and at that time it was dry. We've had several opportunities. If you were dry back then, you've had several chances to get caught up, regardless of where you were in the state.
I think we're ahead right now down in our area. I think a couple of inches, maybe.
Most definitely. I was looking at the March data, and the state's average is about 4.5 inches, which is right about where we want to be, close to normal for March. But Western Kentucky, you guys are six and a half inches. So we had two main systems move through. Of course, the March 3rd storm, the wind storm, no one's going to forget about. But that dumped quite a bit of rainfall along the Ohio River counties, about a tier three counties south of the river. And then we had one about a week ago, same spot. And Western Kentucky took the brunt of it. So.
Yep. Yeah. It was pretty damp, and it's still, you know, it's right now you can actually get on the ground and do some fertilizer work. I actually saw some people working some ground last night when I was going home. So it's, you know, it's right there on that verge of being almost too wet to start to kind of dry out. So a lot of field work going on right now. So, you know, it's a lot of stuff going on. So
yeah, we don't have any field work going on and over my way,
probably
yeah,
but too wet.
It is. Yeah. It's still a little damp over there. That is true.
All that rain they got last year.
Yeah. We was ahead anyway.
I know you was.
Well, I'll tell you guys what. It's been wild since the last time we talked. Of course, we were in the drought late October last year, and looking back, that was our fourth driest fall ever recorded in Western Kentucky.
Wow.
So.
Mm-hmm.
I got some data here, if I can find it real quick. You guys averaged 4.40 inches for the three-month period of September through November last year. That's about
Vicki got all of that.
Vicki got all of that.
Yeah. You guys didn't average none of that.
But, that's 7 inches below normal over a three-month time span, but – then we got into December, and rain started picking up a little bit. But then what happened? We got smacked with an Arctic air event, and temperatures dropped 50 degrees in 12 hours. And combine that with, 40-mile-per-hour winds, and wind chills dropping down to minus 30 or so. So fun stuff. We don't normally see Arctic air events like that.
I'm glad we don't.
Especially another, that early in the year.
Yeah, so. And another good reason not to live up north, you know, those Arctic air blasts. I mean, I couldn't If we had those all the time, I would be in bad shape, y'all. I'd have to move
pretty quick. You know, kudos to those folks who just have learned to endure.
Yeah. I guess it's just what you're used to and your kind of your climate, what you grow up in.
What you're acclimated to.
Yeah, but why would anybody want to move up there? I mean, I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just saying, you know, it takes some tough folks to be in that all the time, you know. Yeah. So.
Well, and then – you know, anytime we have any of these crazy things happen, then you've got all the aftermath of it. With, of course, I think I don't know how many water line issues there were, and homes and businesses and houses. I mean, it was crazy, and lots of businesses are still. Well, Jay, you all. I mean, they're still waiting.
My office, the reconstruction, has just started this week.
Oh wow!
From the event that you speak of, which was a couple of days before Christmas.
Yep. There were several offices, county offices across the state that were impacted by that. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, luckily though, I mean, the rest of the winter ran extremely warm. So, I know I was sending it out in the Ag Weather Update a couple weeks ago. It was our second warmest winter we've ever seen in Kentucky, and that data goes all the way back to 1895. So, 125 plus year record. We just saw our second warmest winter of all time. Now, you know, vegetation was coming alive a lot earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. I was telling folks this really reminded me at the time, and at the end of the day, it really shows up in the stats too. But the winter of 2016-17, I called that the year without a winter too.
Mm-hmm.
But that year ranked number three, number two this year. But it was kind of weird to see because back in 2017, we had a mid-March freeze, and low temperatures plummeted into the teens, and it was like a twin image this year. Second, third week of March came, and here comes the cold. Mm-hmm. And
may or may not have some of the same results to the only real winter crop we have, wheat. May have some of the same effects as what that winter did then.
So you talk about that. I actually was on social media earlier, and Dr. Carrie Knott over at Princeton, the wheat specialist, she was putting some information up on Twitter that said the wheat she's been looking at, and I believe it was Hardin and LaRue counties, looks fine right now. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think, you know, and a lot of producers have probably got so much into this wheat crop, you know, like they've got their second shot of nitrogen on.
Right.
They're probably going to take it to harvest one way or the other.
Yeah, probably should really, at this point.
Yeah, unless something really, really bad happens between now and then.
And that's the big concern I have. And in that particular year, we did have the late freeze, but one of the biggest problems is we had had such a warm December that wheat had broke dormancy and took off growing.
Yeah.
Really should not have been near as far along as it was when that freeze happened, and that's what bit it. This time our wheat was a little bit before then as far as growth stage goes, but it's so active right now, if we had another cold event like that, I don't know how much of it could take. But
yeah, I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was sometime in February. We had a lot of freezing rain. Mm-hmm. I remember it vividly because I was calving right in the middle of all that and had to bring one in the house that night. But that was really, from a winter standpoint, that was the only bad, you know, bad kind of event that we had as far as, you know, that I can remember, other than the really cold deal in Christmas there. So.
Yeah. And you bring up winter wheat and whatnot. I remember Carrie also saying we were in a better spot this year because wheat hadn't developed, like you said, as far as long as we were in 2017, but that was mainly because of the drought conditions and getting started a little later.
It was sown so much later.
Absolutely was.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, the bad part about it is folks really kind of get ahead of the curve when it comes to planting wheat. And if we have a warm winter – and a good fall and a warm winter, that wheat gets really big really quick. And, you know, this year I think that's exactly right. You know, we had that drought and folks kind of, you know, put it in the ground, but it was a long time before it ever came up. And I don't think that wasn't a bad thing this year, you know.
Not at all. I remember vividly a lot of wheat that should not have even jointed yet had two joints in it.
Yeah.
And that was from it being so nice through mm-hmm. December and January. It just it broke dormancy and took off growing.
Yeah. Well, other than wheat, I've been talking to some of the fruit guys.
That's what I was just getting ready to bring up,
I know they just came out with their Fruit Facts newsletter. Google it, type in UKY with it. It should be pulled up. But they were saying peaches are going to take a huge – they took a hit back with that Arctic Air event back in December. But they were blooming out before this latest shot of cold air. And I don't want to say took care of them, but because I've heard there might be some orchards that still have some peaches left, but it may be a rough go. But all the other fruit out there, as long as you had your strawberries covered, plastic culture strawberries more so, I was told matted row really is not to the point yet where it's susceptible. But
again, it's behind in growth.
But, yeah, I mean, this time of year, wheat and fruits – Two main sources we'll be looking at for impact. So
you know, there's enough of a climate change from say the Lexington area where we're at today, versus the southwestern end of the state where we all live and work. Peaches are something that's just going to work ever so often in Kentucky anyway. But we typically stand a chance of having more of an opportunity for peaches down in the southern. Western end of the state, just because of the change in temperatures. We're a little north as a whole for any type of real commercial peach production. Not saying it can't be done, but we're just a little north.
But you think about it, you know, probably every, what, 2 out of 5 years?
That's the number I like to use.
Yeah, you're going to get a crop, and then there's going to be 3 years there you're not going to get anything. Something like this happens or something of this nature. So, but, you know, in pastures are really starting to put out, but I think folks are really seeing the effects of the drought from last year. There's a lot of bare spots in a lot of pasture and those type things. So, I mean, the drought, I think, is going to be something we're going to have to deal with, you know, for a while, maybe until this fall. And hopefully Matt's going to project to us that this summer is going to be a lot better than last summer. So we'll see in a minute. But
well, and, you know, trees sometimes are one of those things, too, after you have a drought. I mean, sometimes it's 2 and 3 years.
4 years.
Four years before you see the true effect that drought really had on trees. And I think in the years coming up, I think we're going to start seeing some of that, you know, because it is slower to show it that it was injured, I guess you could say. It just takes a little bit longer. It just – any of those weather events, whichever end of the spectrum it is –
Well,
you know,
actually,
you have those extreme ones.
Yeah, I actually looked at some shrubs there at the office, and they're dead. And I really think it's that cold weather, that cold snap we had. You know, most of the time, if you have a cold snap, you'll have some dieback a little bit, but these are dead.
Yeah.
You know, so folks, be on the lookout for that for sure.
I know in my career I've had to explain to people almost while it was raining that they lost the big tree in their yard because of drought, and they just look at you like you had two heads. But – it's very, you know, the thing about a big enough tree may take 3 or 4 years to completely die because of a dry year. So,
well, and then we end up having, you know, talking about these weather events. I mean, when it starts warming up, of course, like you've already said, we've been pretty warm.
Yep.
And then now we're right there on April, and we'll have some really warm days, and then everybody's going to be putting their garden out.
Yep.
And then we'll have another late frost or you know, and so it's always mindful to keep in mind that sometimes it's best to hold back way a little bit if you're not going to be able to cover it up, protect it.
And you know, you say that. Let me give you a little tidbit of information about the National Weather Service and frost advisories and freeze warnings. You haven't seen any this year yet, right? So there's a reason behind that, and they're only issuing frost advisories and freeze warnings if agriculture is susceptible, and we can do something to prevent damage. So winter wheat, there's nothing we can do. Fruit trees, 99.9% of the time, there's nothing we can do.
Yep.
Strawberries, we can put out some floating row covers. Vegetables, we can. So, but we're not putting out vegetables right now. Strawberries, not quite at that point. You know, the homeowner is going to be worried about them. But because of that, we're not issuing any of those advisories and warnings right now. But just looking at the forecast ahead, we do have some bouts of near freezing temperatures this upcoming week. But then going into next week, we're going to start warming up. And that's when I'm going to start getting worried. We don't want to get smacked with another freezing air event. So, yeah.
But it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens, you know, from time to time. It's
getting smacked, that's a scientific term. That's about the way it feels sometimes when you get a late weather event like
that. Well, Matt, kind of for the next, just for the next couple of months, what do you see happening? I mean, what do you think's going to, what's kind of going to be the patterns that we're going to see for, you know, April, May?
Yeah, yeah. So we're taping this on March 29th right now. We have another system set to move through on Friday. I know you all are out in western Kentucky. There is a severe weather chance. Right now it looks like the main impact or main threat would be damaging winds. Now, that's a low confidence forecast right now. 2 days out, we still have the forecast still coming together. But another inch or so of rain with that system. Now, this is going to be more of your quick-hitting system. It should be in and out of here. So I'm not anticipating so much in the way of flooding like you guys saw in those two major events during March. But looking farther out, we got another, looks like, storm system coming through next Tuesday. And then looking out the next 2 weeks, outlooks are pretty solid that we're going to see above normal rainfall and above normal temperatures over that period. Going out further, that's where your confidence really starts dropping off. I know looking out through the spring months, the outlooks are pointing toward above normal temperatures and above normal precipitation, but so much can happen within that 3 month period. We're going to have our ups, we're going to have our downs. It's hard to pick up on that stuff right now, but generally speaking, spring, warmer, wetter. I know last year, I believe we were in the same boat going into April, except we were dealing more so with cold temperatures. This year will be the saturated fields out there. And, you know, when can we get into the field? So I think that's going to be the issue in 2023. Saying that, you know, I know Dr. Chadley always says it, don't plant by the calendar. Go out when that soil is right. We have plenty of time. I think I read one of his articles yesterday. It said something like most of the corn in Kentucky is planted, no matter the size of your operation, within 11 days. So, you know, we got time. We're going to see some dry windows. So, again, you don't want to go by the calendar.
Yeah, when it's a wet spring like that, that's when we tend to see a whole lot more sidewall compaction, where if you could just wait just and sometimes it's just a day or 2 days, you know, it'll make a big difference. And
you talked about wind probably being a factor again, you know, and we've seen some pretty rough wind events this spring. Is there a reason for that, Matt? Is there something going on? What's the deal with that?
It's that time of year. Winter season, spring season, that's when you typically see these high wind events. That's the bends in the jet stream we're seeing at this time of year during the winter months. Summer, we'll see that jet stream pass north, and it'll be mainly those isolated thunderstorms that can bring us those high winds. But I say this is normal for this time of year, but I did some digging because you're not the only one that says it's been windy this year. First off, I mean, I have this data plotter or whatnot, and the National Weather Service issues wind advisories whenever we have gusts anticipated over 40 miles per hour. And sometimes those can be upgraded to a high wind warning. And looking back, I think it goes back to 2005, this is the most wind advisories Kentucky has seen issued to this point in the year. So you talk about a windy year, it's definitely been a windy year. And on top of that, I know we were talking earlier about the March 3rd event. that was another rare event that we can add to the books here in Kentucky. We saw the tornadoes, we saw the flooding, we saw the Arctic air event. That's pretty rare in itself. Mm-hmm. And then we had this extreme low pressure system move through. The lowest pressure readings ever recorded were broken in Paducah and Evansville at that time. And whenever you have extreme low pressure, you can expect high winds. And I know pressure readings with this storm were dipping below 980 millibars, which is significant for this area, obviously. But we saw hurricane force winds with mm-hmm. this system. A Category 1 hurricane, you have to have winds hitting 74 miles per hour. And that's what we were seeing across Kentucky, 60 to 80 mile per hour gusts all over the place.
And for a sustained amount of time, that's what I couldn't get over.
Yeah, yeah. We were here in Lexington, and we missed out on the storms earlier in the day, but I was telling everybody, watch out when that sun comes out. That's when it's going to become pretty breezy. And you guys were already feeling it over in Western Kentucky. I think at the end of the day, there was over 500,000 customers without power across Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And
I was one of them.
But I mean, looking back at history, that's what we call gradient winds. Mm-hmm. So outside of any thunderstorm, the last time we saw winds like that was probably Hurricane Ike back in September 2008.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's been a while, and you have 500,000 plus customers without power, you know. Mm-hmm. Round of applause to those linemen. I mean,
no doubt.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
They worked their butts off to get power back across mm-hmm. Kentucky. And
I talked to one of the insurance companies, and they said they had over 32,000 claims from that storm. It had surpassed the tornadoes that came through Mayfield and Hopkins County and all through there in the Dawson. But it had already surpassed dollar amount. It had already surpassed.
And didn't you say they said they're still coming in, too?
And they're still coming in, yeah. Yep. So 32,000 and counting.
Yeah.
So
two things about that storm, too. Before that, those high winds got to us, you guys out in Western Kentucky, 2, 3, 4 inches of rain, so the ground was saturated. So trees were coming down with the root ball.
Yep.
And but I was telling folks after the event, we're lucky this didn't happen in May or something when all the leaves were on the mm-hmm. trees. I mean, it could have been a lot worse.
A lot heavier, so they would a lot more. Yeah.
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 A lot more resistance.
Yeah. There. Well, to catch the wind.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We had several trees. Well, I'm like Jay, I'm still cleaning up trees off of fence rows and had big, like water maples where they're really not that deep rooted anyway, and had one of those kind of do the whole root ball thing there in the yard there. So, I mean, I'm still cleaning up stuff. So,
but this goes back to what I've been preaching to everybody the past 2 years. You got to have a plan ready for these type of events. So, they're happening more and more often here in the state of Kentucky. And this one, a lot of folks lost power. What are you going to do if you lose power for several days? I know a lot of people that weren't happy when they lost all their meat in their deep freezes. So, yeah.
I have two generators, and that's the first thing I did was get my small one going to see how long it was going to be. And I just alternated it between my freezers.
Yeah.
And kept them fine. I was to that point by the end of the second day. I was fixed to get my big generator out and run everything off of it. And the power came back on literally while I was manhandling the generator to get it back outside. About 3 days is what we were out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but, you know, Matt, that goes back to what you've been talking about and kind of been telling folks is to be prepared. Yeah. And that's one way you can be prepared is to have some generators that if you have freezers or if you have things like that, that you know that you need to and want to be self-sufficient, you need to invest in, you know,
and pull those out and crank them every now and again when you're not using them either, because you don't want to, you know, have it have one and not have tried to crank it or anything for 3 years, and then you need it and then you can't get it, then something's wrong with it too.
Keeping them out and keeping them running. Yeah. I think that is we could probably do a show just on the little things like that you need to keep up and going for when you need them.
Yep.
Well, something I think about too, and you guys know more about prices and whatnot than I do, but price of a generator compared to losing that.
Oh yeah, it's deep not
freeze.
In comparison.
I mean, I know meat prices have risen drastically.
Well, and I'll complicate that another level. I'm a type 1 diabetic. I have two different kinds of insulin that I have to keep refrigerated, that I have to keep safe no matter what. When we had that windstorm in our first March and our electric went out, I had just been to the pharmacy that week and got my whole month's supply. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if it meant going to a hotel and getting a refrigerator, that's what I'd have had done. But because of that condition and because of my need to make sure that's always on tap, I have a small portable generator.
Yeah.
And it's one that I can run a refrigerator off of. I can have it set up ready to go in 5 minutes. And it is for people who are prepared for things like that, and I'm not saying anything good about myself, but for people who are prepared for things like that, you tend to not worry as much about things like that.
Peace of mind.
Peace of mind. You just make that adjustment and go on. Mm-hmm. And my wife even made the comment. She said, I don't know what people do. She's sitting with her feet up, you know, watching the generators run. She said, I don't know what people do. Because they just you hear all the time about people, oh, the power's been out for 3 hours. What do I do?
Yeah.
That's just a worry we don't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a good point. I mean, the peace of mind. I remember back, I think it was 2019, we had the drought that year in the fall, and there was some concern about hay supplies going into the winter season. And I was talking to a buddy of mine, and he went ahead and bought some extra hay just for the peace of mind aspect. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about that once we get to February or something. So.
Yep. That's at our place, I try to keep 3 years' worth of hay in the barn. This year, because of the drought, I had to dip into my hay supply for year after next. So we're going to be looking to replenish that this spring. So hopefully, there's no way I can produce enough hay to fill both of those barns, but hopefully I can find some hay to buy.
Or in the next year or two, you'll have one of those years where you'll make way more than you need.
Right, right. And I'm hoping for that this year. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but it sure would be nice, you know, to not have to buy a bunch. But, you know, it is what it is. And you know, to have that peace of mind, like Matt's talking about, you know, I'm going to get those barns filled this year one way or the other, you know, kind of deal. So
we've all heard people say, well, I don't know if I'm going to cut that the third time this year because I may not need it. But
guarantee it, I'll be cutting it the third time.
Somebody will need it. That's what I've always heard old-timers say. Somebody will need it.
You know, and we do that from time to time. You'll have those years where you'll get – we have a lot of Johnson grass that makes really good hay. So it a lot of times you can cut that three times or cut that field three times during the year. So, you know, I'm sure we'll not miss a chance to cut hay because in the past we've actually bush hogged because we've just had so much and had plenty, and we've just bush hogged that. You know, we won't be doing that this time.
Bet we don't see many bush hogs
this year. We won't for sure this year. But,
a lot more hay rollers.
Yeah. And, you know, that like I said, that drought has been hard on pastures. It's been hard on hay fields and folks coming in too, and then I'll let Matt kind of address this really quick, but like summer and fall, you know, kind of what you're seeing, because we're going to have to do a bunch of reseeding this fall.
Yeah.
So
just tell you the truth. I can't honestly. Yeah.
No, I got you here.
Give you a good
I got
forecast
you here,
for that. But, but saying that, I will say about, you know, preparing for the future and whatnot, we saw a short-term drought in the fall 16. That was, you know, all the wildfires across eastern Kentucky. I think you guys were dealing with combine field fires and stuff out in western Kentucky. 2019, dry. 2022, dry. Now, I'm not saying these things are happening every 3 years. They have, but they're going to happen. And we have to plan ahead for them because while we haven't had any long-lasting droughts like out across the western United States have seen, now they're getting some help now, But these short-term droughts can be just as impactful to Kentucky agriculture. So,
yep, I agree.
Do they speak to any longer-term type patterns that you may see noticing, or is it just cyclical in nature?
I don't think personally I would even say they're cyclical in nature. It's just this past decade we've been in a wetter climate, and our droughts aren't very long lasting. In 2019 we had our driest September ever recorded. That was followed by our fourth wettest October ever recorded. So quite the down and quite the up that year, but it was still impactful. But I'm not saying we're going to have another fall drought in fall of 2025, 3 years from now. But knock on wood, and I hope we don't have one this year. Right. We definitely don't need it. But yeah.
I've heard the old timers, I guess, if for lack of a better word, have said one extreme follows another. Mm-hmm. I know we've all heard that, And I remember, a drought, and then we had the flood back several years ago where we had one of clay in Webster County. It was like an island. You couldn't get in or out of it. But one extreme follows another. And when you look back, it's kind of interesting that a lot of times you do kind of see that. I don't know that there's a scientific reason for it, but I guess that's why those folks would see that, those patterns over the years. But
So Jay and I are getting rain this time and you're not?
It could happen. It could happen. And then if that's the case, I'm just gonna
hear about it.
Yeah, y'all are gonna hear about it.
Just like you heard about it when you got all the rain.
Well, Matt, if you don't mind, just talk a little bit about the website, because that the UK Ag Weather, that website has got a tremendous amount of information on it. It's got more than I can even try to dive into, but just talk a little bit about, how we can use that, how farmers can use that, and like the updates that you put on, or just in general about that website and all that there is.
So our website, UK Ag Weather Center, is at weather.uky.edu. So again, weather.uky.edu. And our main product is called the Point Ag Forecast. And basically, you can watch a 6 p.m. broadcast meteorologist at night, and he'll give you a general idea of what the weather's going to be like the next week. But with the Point Ag Forecast, we go into a more detailed look at the forecast. We're also adding some ag-specific forecasts. So, yes, we'll show you what temperatures, precipitation, when that precipitation is going to start, when it's going to end, how much, wind speeds. I know that's been a hot topic this year. But also, as we go into the growing season, spraying conditions, drying conditions.
Important.
Mm-hmm. Livestock heat stress will be an issue at some point this year. So. Mm-hmm. Some of those forecasts, what we're looking at using that product, we have a county product. You can see how much your local, maybe the Kentucky Mesonet Station, has recorded the past 7 days, the past month, the past 2 months, you name it. What's temperatures been like at that station? Right now, I know Dr. Rick Besson, UK Extension entomologist on campus, he's been using one of our insect prediction models for alfalfa weevil. You want to go start scouting fields whenever degree day accumulations hit 190 for that specific pest, and he is seeing some damage across the state. Mm-hmm. So I think we hit that 190 degree day threshold across, I guess, about everywhere across the southern half of the state at least. But anyways, we have a map on our website where you can go and see where your county's degree day accumulations are at this point in time. You can accumulate growing degree days with some of our models. One thing about this warmth we saw in January and February, I accumulate growing degree days. If you're not familiar with degree days or growing degree days, it's basically relating temperature to the development of a particular crop or pest. And there's a base temperature for growth, for any particular crop or pest. For corn, I know we say 50 degrees. For alfalfa weevil, it's 48 degrees. So we take the average temperature for the day, subtract that base temperature, and if it's above that base temperature, you're accumulating growing degree days. So I accumulated since January 1st out until now, and we're running right with 2017 in terms of vegetative development. We're running a little ahead of schedule in terms of alfalfa weevil. So things like that gives you a heads up as a farmer, as a producer across the state, looking at agriculture. So,
and I'm assuming you can go back. So if you're a little behind on your pesticide record keeping and you need to put that weather data where you were located, you know, in your area, you could go to that website and pull up the county information or
pull up that county information, mm-hmm. download it if you want to. I will say in terms of data, I want to put in a word for the Kentucky MesNet. So we're lucky to have that network of weather stations across the state. Mm-hmm. I think we hit or we're very close to 80 stations across the state of Kentucky. Yeah. And very high quality, research quality weather stations. I talked to the new director down there. His name is Dr. Jerry Brodsky. And he mentioned to me their goal is to get to 100 across the state of Kentucky. So not only do those MesNet stations help us on the agricultural mm-hmm. side, but even such things as the National Weather Service in issuing severe thunderstorm warnings if one of those MesNets picks up a 60-mile-per-hour gust. So mm-hmm. A great source of weather information, climate information here in the state of Kentucky. So.
Matt, does the forecast that you have on that website, are they county-specific? Are they region-specific? How does that...
You can go down to your zip code. So we do have a map on the front page of our website. It's probably the easiest way to access that Point Ag forecast. Just click on your county, and you'll get that seven-day forecast moving forward. Now, saying that, we made the Point Ag forecast. It's based on forecast data coming in from the National Weather Service, and that's across the nation. So if you're a farmer down in South Carolina, Oklahoma, you name it, you can access that UK Point Ag forecast no matter where you are. And it's interesting to go to the National Farm Machinery Show and a guy comes up to you from Texas and says, hey, I use your product. So it's pretty cool to hear.
That's
so
good, yeah.
We've kind of developed our own little language. And earlier when you started talking about the website, David looked at me and started pointing his finger, and I knew that meant put the link in our show notes so everybody yeah. can get it.
As I was writing it down on the piece of paper over here.
And something else I'll mention, the past, I think it's going on about a year, year and a half now, but I've been writing a weekly newsletter called the Ag Weather Update, and you can sign up for it. It's sent straight to your mailbox. You can access that on the front page mm-hmm. at weather.uky.edu. But I try to give folks across the state a heads up mm-hmm. of what's about to happen, if there was an interesting event, how it impacted agriculture, so on and so forth. But again, I'm probably going to come out with the next update tomorrow, and we'll mm-hmm. be talking about early April, what the planting season early on is going to look like. And again, don't plant by the calendar. So
that's right.
Good stuff. Well, you know, you've been a retread now. You're somebody who's been on our show more than one time. So, you know, we always like to wrap our show up with a timely temp. I think we've got a couple right now. One I went ahead and wrote down that you mentioned. With our local weather patterns being a little bit wetter than normal, producers should be ready to go whenever that weather breaks. Anything you want to add to that or
Make sure that equipment's ready to go. You know, do your walk arounds, get it out of the barn, maybe do a little testing. Just make sure everything is in working order, seeds ready to go, fertilizer, you name it. Just be ready to go because we are living in a wetter climate now. Now, I know last year we had a drought. A wetter climate doesn't mean we can't have droughts now and again.
Right.
But our windows for planting, our windows for spraying, our windows for baling hay, they're getting narrower now. And just making sure you're ready to go when those dry windows hit. We don't want to miss them. If the soil's good to go.
Need to be ready to go.
Yeah.
Just whenever the weather breaks, that's the timely tip right now is be ready to run. You also mentioned another one that you talked about when you did the show with us before, but that's have an emergency preparedness plan. And just touch on that just a little bit too for us, please.
So, again, natural disasters have been on the increase. We've seen several the past couple of years, even this high wind event, everybody losing power for several days, maybe more than that. We got to be ready for the next one. It's going to happen. I can't tell you when the next one's going to happen, but we are going to see another storm, a winter storm, an ice storm, a tornado. It's a flooding event. It's going to happen. So having a plan ready to go, asking yourself the what ifs on your farm. What if I go a week without power? What if we have a major drought, as we were talking about earlier? But anyways, something I want to mention is, you know, down in Mississippi this past weekend, they had a tornado outbreak down there. And it's just a reminder, we have to have our safety plan in place. We got to know how we're going to get warning information, whether that's a NOAA weather radio, whether that's your TV meteorologist. We always say you want to have multiple sources of getting this information. You want to know where your safe shelter is. If you got a two-story house, lowest level, innermost, maybe that's a bathroom, innermost room, putting the most walls between you and the outdoor environment. But seeing the pictures out of Mississippi this past weekend, they saw EF4 tornado, same intensity we saw in western Kentucky back in December 2021. It hit me. The broadcast meteorologist was saying a prayer on air. He saw a debris ball. Debris ball on radar is not good news. It went through a populated region. You have lumber up in the air, shingles, you name it. So being ready for that next one, and, you know, I'll say real quick, today's March 29th. We saw the tornadoes back in December 2021. That was bad. But April 3rd and 4th, 1974, I was not around for that.
I was.
You
Me
were.
Too.
That was, I mean, December was scary stuff, but April 3rd and 4th, 1974 took it to another level. There was 148 tornadoes confirmed over 13 states back then. Now, we had one EF4 tornado. That's the Enhanced Fujita scale. It goes from an EF0 tornado to an EF5 tornado. We had one back in 2021. They had 30 over 2 days. F4, F5 tornadoes on April 3rd and 4th, 1974. Yep. So it was a bad couple days.
Little town of Mansville in Taylor County, where I'm originally from, was just about moved off the map by one of those tornadoes.
Well, and we talk about the EF4 back in 2021. The only F5, EF5 tornado we've ever seen in the state's history occurred during that event back in 74, and that was in Brandenburg. Mm. So,
wow.
Got to be ready.
Yep.
Be ready, and something I'll add to that is with all the technology out there, we hear the message, whether it's through social media, whether it's through that local meteorologist like you mentioned. The only thing I would add to that is heed those warnings, because our technology is so good today, they don't miss it by much. When they say watch out, they mean watch out.
You never know when that next tornado could hit you. You may have had 20, 30 tornado warnings through your lifetime go through and none of them hit you, but that doesn't mean the next one won't. So anyways.
Get you a radio, weather radio. We got one after Matt's last time on our program. We got one. So
Matt was mentioning to us before we started recording that he is thinking about a YouTube video on programming one of those.
Yeah. Good idea.
We want to see that whenever it comes about.
Yeah.
I keep hitting this table. I did this last time. Something else I will mention before we go off the air. Several of us folks in the college, we got funding to put together a app, a cell phone app. Mm-hmm. So be looking for that this
That'll
year.
That'll be nice.
There's going to be multiple phases. The first phase, we're planning on emergency preparedness, mitigation. Second phase, we'll be adding ag weather tools and whatnot to it. But, it should be on the way in 2023.
Yeah, when you get it up, let us know. We'll get on here. And
we'll make a show about it, but we'll put a link in our show notes to that as well. That'd be very interesting.
Yep.
So, well, Matt, we appreciate you being here with us. We want to thank you for our information and thank our host as well. We hope our listeners are enjoying our show, and we thank you for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.